The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 179. Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to the show. Richard Ryerson here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Thank you so much for all your support, and please make sure you're telling your friends, your family, your coworkers about the show. We continue to grow by leaps and bounds. We are consistently a top 25 business podcast in iTunes, and I couldn't do it without your support. If you haven't done so, please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review this show. It does so much to the visibility of this show. There's new podcasts coming out every day, and we're continuing to stay out in front. You know, I want to keep it front and center, and so with your help, we can continue to do that. Please subscribe, rate, and review. It means so much to me. I want to do some brand new friends to the show, partnering with 99 Designs. You know, they've helped me so much with my branding of the business that, you know, branding is the face of your business. You can make a great impression with creative professional designs from 99 Designs. I love what they do there. Visit 99designs.com/leadership and get a power pack upgrade absolutely free. Well, I'm absolutely thrilled to have back on the show Jim Kouzes, the best-selling author, award-winning speaker, and according to the Wall Street Journal, one of the 12 best executive educators in the United States. He's been thinking about leadership since he was an Eagle Scout, and he's currently is the Dean, Dean's Executive Fellow of Leadership at the Levy School of Business in Santa Clara University. He's consistently on one of the top 100 top thought leaders on leadership in the United States and throughout the world. He's my favorite leadership author. He's one of my first guests I had on Dose of Leadership. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure.
You know, I don't know if you remember me telling you this, but it's been almost 21 months when we did our interview, first interview. And you were the first guy when I decided, I was sitting on the edge of my bed in December in 2012. And I said, how can I get more noticed in a noisy world? And I was looking at my book and The Truth About Leadership was on my bookshelf. And I said, what if I had conversations with all these people on my bookshelf? And I emailed everybody that day and you were the first respondent. I don't know if you ever knew that or not. You were the first person to say yes to be a part of the show. So,
well, thank you for asking him. I didn't know that, but I'm delighted I got in there early.
Yeah, well, you were a catalyst for the show because I've said this story many times that I don't know what got in me that day, and I just interviewed, and you responded, and I was so shocked. And I said, and in my email, I said, I'm starting a podcast in the end of January, and I had nothing on paper. And when you said yes, that kind of said, I better figure this out because I don't want to let Jim down. So,
well, you did figure it out.
Right.
How many shows have you done now?
I've released 100 and at this recording, 175 interviews, but I've done almost 200. I think this is
just amazing.
So
21 months. That's spectacular.
It's been a crazy fun ride. And like I said, I owe a lot to you and your generous and your generosity in helping after and helping, giving me some new guests. And so I owe you a lot. And so thank you very much, sir, for all you've done.
My pleasure. Delighted to do it.
Well, what have you,
we'll do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. What have you been up to in the past 21 months?
Well, the most recent book we released was a little short book, which I hope we'll have a little opportunity to talk about because, you know, it's topical, what's happening in the world today, turning adversity into opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
It's just more like a white paper. It released as an ebook. But right before that, we came out with our newest materials for student leadership. And so both those projects have occupied a lot of time and attention, particularly the youth leadership work has captured a lot of our energy. We're wanting to make a contribution to that next generation of leaders as they enter college and move on into the work world, but also thinking about high school and even middle school and how we can do a better job of developing leaders, because there are just some compellings to do that, not the least of which is it won't be too many years from now before they're leading us.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you bring that up. And that the ideas of, well, youth leadership comes up a lot in these interviews. It's been a prevalent theme, especially talking about the millennials and what they think about leadership. Adversity and overcoming fear and uncertainty, that has probably been, in fact, I was talking to a woman yesterday, and she's just started listening to the show, and she asked me, what has been the biggest lessons you've learned, or what's been the prevalent theme? And it has been this idea of overcoming adversity. I mean, that really separates us from who's successful and who isn't, right? I mean, successful people kind of expect adversity, don't they? I mean, the other shoe's going to drop whether we like it or not. So we might as well be prepared, but at the same time, don't be kind of frozen by it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I always remember the quote from John McDonnell, who was former CEO of McDonnell Douglas, a company that was later purchased by Boeing, I believe. And you know, they were a company that went through a lot of adversity, which ultimately ended in the business being implemented along the lines of what you're saying, that adversity introduces us to ourselves. And that's where we learn most about what our capabilities are. In fact, I was talking with my wife the other day. Our son is just out of graduate school with his master's in screenwriting, working on an independent film.
Wow.
And he's working with a crew of relatively young people. And, you know, as one happens in all projects, but something like a live action movie where you're in the outdoors and it involves bears, stuff happens.
Right.
And we were just talking about how, boy, he's really learning a lot because of the adversity that comes along with something like that. And it's so true. You know, one of the interesting things we found in our research on personal best leadership experiences, to your point about we're all going to encounter this, is that when we ask people to tell us about the times they'd done their best as leaders, they told us about adversity, difficulty, challenge, doing something different, doing something unique and for the first time. And we didn't ask them to tell us about adversity or challenge or difficulty. We asked them to tell us about best practices when they were operating at their best. And they told us about times that were difficult. And so I think you're absolutely right. Those are the times that provide the context for leading. So we should expect, as you say, to encounter uncertainty. And there is an element of fear. There is an element of surprise. And we need to know how to deal with it.
So is the goal to eliminate the fear, or is it to work through the fear? Is it to exploit the fear? What do you think it is?
I think it is, as many people talk about courage, courage is acting in the face of fear. We may not at the time even acknowledge it because we're so busy dealing with the problem. We later step back and say, whoa, that was scary.
Right.
But you know, I think the first step, we just finished a book called Turning Adversity into Opportunity, as I mentioned. And the first step in the process of doing that is to broaden the context. So when we encounter some kind of difficult circumstance, is to acknowledge that this isn't the first time in human history it's ever happened.
Great point. Yeah.
That it's happened not only to other people before, but it's probably happened to us before.
Right.
And here we are. We survived it. We're, you know, in human history, we're still around, thankfully, despite all of the challenges that we've faced as human beings. We're still here. And hopefully we're a bit better today than we were yesterday. And there's going to be more challenges ahead. And acknowledging that, broadening the context, will enable us to realize that we have the capacity to deal with it personally and organizationally.
I like that idea. I like the broadening the context. It just sounds good because you're right. It's like it's getting the big picture. It's taking a step back. It's kind of soaking it in and saying, okay, I've been here before. No, I like that. It's kind of just a mental pause almost before you gather your thoughts and make a decision.
Absolutely. Two stories related to that. One has to do with an activity we do when we have people explore this idea of adversity and challenge in their own lives. So we ask them to look back in their life and look back at the highs and the lows and ask yourself, you know, what enabled you to pull yourself out of that low, and what were you striving for? What were your aspirations that got you to the highs? And that experience of people reflecting on that can be extremely revealing to them. It's also a wonderful way of building a team, because knowing that the other people on your team have been through adversity and they've gotten through it also helps you to realize that we're stronger as a group because we've done this. And I remember a conversation with Kaylee Adair. Kaylee is a high school student. She's a senior this coming school year in Colorado. And she wrote an email to me asking if I would talk to her high school student council and Colorado Association of Student Councils meeting via Skype call. And so I thought, well, this would be a fun opportunity. So I said yes. And after we had done this, she wrote me an email. And in it, she said, my absolute favorite thing about human beings is that we're never satisfied with our condition. I thought, wow, that's a leadership attitude.
That's a young woman, right?
Who's going to talk about handling uncertainties. She's going to do well in her life because she loves it. It's her favorite thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I almost would, I was kind of thinking along those lines that, and I was, who was I talking to? It's immaterial. It's a local kind of entrepreneur here in town. And we were talking about this over breakfast, and he said, and I think I agree with him, that at some point you get so used to almost like an exercise in the other process that it almost becomes second nature. And that he looks at when the gets the nervous stomach, the butterflies, he really hones in on it because he knows something great is going to happen on the other side of that. And he uses it as a signal, fear that is, as a way of knowing that this is what I should be focusing on right now. And I just think that's kind of a neat way to look at it.
It is. It is a neat way to look at it. And he knows that when that's happening to him, it's not something to avoid, but something to pay attention to, because there's something going on there. Your body's telling you something. And you know, what is it telling me, and what's going on out there that's creating this, and how can I deal with it?
You know, you wrote about that, and I think we talked about this in our first interview, you know, great section of courage and taking the story about Rosa Parks. And and what a great – I know we may have talked this before, but maybe from new listeners, you know, talk about that piece about, you know, we're – if you look at the specific actions that she did, we're all capable of it, and you can change the world. But talk about that.
It's surprising how the simple the action was that she took. For those who haven't heard this story before, Rosa Parks was the part of the civil rights movement, and she became famous when she got on a bus in Alabama, and she was asked by the bus driver. This was in December of 1955 in Montgomery, Alabama. And she was asked by the bus driver to move from the white section of the bus to the back of the bus. And she refused. She said, no, I'm not. And then he said to her, well, if you don't move, then I'll have you arrested. And she said, go ahead. Now, those actions by themselves are very simple. We can all sit, and we can all refuse to move, and we can all accept that there are consequences for it, but not everyone does. And why don't we do those kind of things typically? Why don't we have the courage of our convictions, if you will?
Right.
And that's really where it becomes a personal choice. But in her case, she felt so strongly about the situation that those simple actions caused a national movement to get energized. And we come to refer to that as a Rosa Parks moment. And it's generated when you apply initiative. to a core value. And a Rosa Parks moment really is that simple. Think about in your own life. When are you going to apply initiative to a core value? And that's really where what propels you beyond just a everyday to something more courageous. But it can be a simple action. It doesn't have to be something dramatic that makes the nightly news. Well, in her right. case, it did make the nightly news. But it doesn't have to be, you know, something that we see in a battle scene in war, and you know, or you rush into a burning building. It can be a very simple action, like simply staying seated and being willing to accept the consequences if you do.
Yeah, and I think the important thing to point out, as you said, is like when she made the choice, she chose to be courageous at that moment. It wasn't like, I'm going to do this to start a national movement. She was simply, as you put, a seamstress on her way home from work or church or work, and she just was tired of, like I said, she noticed that this really went against her core values, and yeah. she stuck with the conviction, and something great happened on the other side. She had no idea what was going to happen on the other side, but she knew she was going to, she stuck through it, and that's what was important to her.
Absolutely. You know, she was quoted afterwards as saying, I didn't get on the bus to get arrested. I got on the bus to go home.
Right. Right.
And you know, she continued by saying, you know, it's funny to me how people came to believe that the reason I did not move from my seat was that my feet were tired. She said, my feet were not tired, but I was tired of unfair treatment.
Yeah, that's just so great. And it's just that what's so great about that story and the Rosa Parks moment is that we'd never give ourselves really the credit or the – we're so much more influential than we give ourselves credit for. And again, not that we're trying to influence for influence sake, but man, to be courageous, and you can't, as you say, you can't plan to be it, but you can certainly choose it. And yeah. When you know that it's a choice, I think that, because I'm like what you said to your point, I used to look at courage maybe as, you know, landing on, you know, Neil Armstrong running out of gas, you know, nearly running out of gas, landing on the moon, or, you know, Jim Bassalone winning the Medal of Honor in World War II. You know, fending off the enemy for 3 days a night. And when I realize that it's a choice and that you're going to be afraid, it's not being fearless. Like you said, it's working through despite the fear. Then we all can be courageous.
Well, part of it is also, you know, in the everyday life, thinking about the more everyday moments that we all face, you know, Max Dupree who said, the first job of leader is to define reality. And I think another step in the process is just to face the facts. You know, and some research that was done by the Pew Center for People in the Press, they asked people, do you want to hear good news or bad news? Would you feel better knowing even when the news is bad? And 85% of people say, yes, I would feel better knowing even when news is bad. There are some who want to live in denial and don't want to hear bad news. But most of us are willing to accept that we face a problem, we face a crisis, we have a difficulty. But then to take the next step beyond that and say, no, I don't have to accept that we're going downhill, that the country's falling apart, that our organization's going to not be successful, that I'm not going to be successful. We can accept the diagnosis but deny or defy the verdict that's associated with it. It's that yes, it's possible attitude that will enable you to get through it. So you accept the diagnosis, but you defy the verdict.
Hey, halfway through the show here, I want to take the time to pause and talk about 99 Designs, especially for you startup entrepreneurs, people who are thinking about starting a podcast. You know, we'd all like to avoid the dreary side of business. I know I did. I like the sexy side of doing these interviews, but let's face it, behind the work, there's paperwork, there's all kinds of things we got to do. If you've decided to take the leap and you're ready to start your own business, you're probably knee-deep in all kinds of details and you're overwhelmed, you know, and you may find that the creative side of your brain is craving attention. Luckily, there's one task you need to do that is more creative, and that is getting a few designs in place so you can begin connecting with clients, so you can start getting the name and face of your business. You know, with a powerful logo, a website, social media design, all of that, you'll be able to promote your business. It gets excited. It starts to become tangible and real, both in person and online, and you can start right away. At 99 Designs, a leader in the graphic design space, you can get anything designed in just a week for a startup-friendly price. I can tell you, this is great, especially when you're in a bootstrap budget. 99 Designs can help you build your client base before you even open your doors. I've used 99 Designs, and I love the personal experience and the flexibility of working with them. What if you could start your next design project today and have dozens of designs to choose from in just 7 days? Well, you can. Visit 99designs.com/leadership and get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. What? How did you come to grips with uncertainty and fear? I mean, if you look back of when you were a young Eagle Scout to where you're at now, I mean, what was your transition like?
Well, I think a lot of it in my own life came, you know, when I decided after college. Well, I, first of all, I guess another part of this context in which I grew up. I grew up in a time in our history in this country where people started to protest. People started to express their unhappiness with their current condition. A lot of that was associated with the war in Vietnam. And so I was in college at the time that the war started to get hot. And so that was part of the context. You saw people taking actions that certainly weren't typical of our parents' generation. They had fought in World War II. They had come back. They'd fought in the Korean War. They were now ready to raise families, get life back to normal. And it was kind of the Ozzy and Harriet days.
Right.
Then things started to happen where people felt that it wasn't right what was being done, whether you agreed with it or not. But there were a lot of people who began to protest what was happening. And so that was contextually part of my upbringing. And I also grew up in Washington, D.C. Suburbs. My dad worked for the government. And so I had wanted to do something to be of service myself. I was in John F. Kennedy's Honor Guard as an Eagle Scout. I heard him give his famous speech in which he asked, you know, ask not what you can do for your country, but what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And I took that seriously, and I decided I'd join the Peace Corps. And it was really then, I think, that I realized that, you know, if I'm going to fulfill my own mission in life and achieve my own aspirations, I needed to take some big risks. I needed to do something very different in my life. And so I went to a foreign country where I didn't speak the language, had to learn a different language, had to learn different customs, and found that not only did I get through it okay, but I really benefited from it greatly. And so putting ourselves in a situation where we're foreign, if you will, it's alien to us, it's different than what we normally experience, I realize is a growth, can be growthful, can help us to grow and develop as persons. Yeah. So the Peace Corps experience helped me to realize that actively initiating and accepting unique experiences, one in which were foreign to me, were alien to me, that I wasn't accustomed to, became growth experiences. And that's really what set me on the trajectory of my current career.
So going back to the original question then, the fear. So did you always look at kind of fear and uncertainty as gifts, or did you look at courage of kind of like, hey, this is something I got to avoid, you know, the fear piece?
No, I think like a lot of people whom we interviewed and when we wrote about courage and we asked them to tell us the moment of courage, at the time you were going through it, you didn't think about it that way. And I didn't think about it that way. I just thought about, here's something I really want to do, going back to the conviction part of the important value that I held. I wanted to do something to be of service. I wanted to do something that would give back. I wanted to do something that would bring my little contribution to world peace. And so in pursuing that, I discovered that there was a lot of uncertainty involved, that, you know, again, didn't know the language, didn't know the culture, had to learn all those things. But because I really wanted to, I aspired to do something unique and different, that got me through that. Going back, looking back on, you say, oh my God, you know, I could have starved to death because, you know, I wouldn't have known how to ask for food.
But, right.
It wasn't thinking about it at the time. And I think that's true of most people when they engage in something that's very important to them. You don't really experience that. You don't think about it rationally.
Right. You know, you were talking about the youth movement or the research you've done on kind of the youth leadership. And, you know, one thing that has happened to me over the last almost 2 years from this podcast and talking to people like yourself and others is I've regained a sense of optimism, particularly about the millennial generation and their kind of entrepreneurial spirit. I think and I sense, and a lot of the people that I've interviewed in the show think, that there is one afoot. I'd like to know what your thoughts on that are and kind of the your optimism or pessimism of leadership in that kind of generation.
I too feel similarly. The more we work with millennials, the more we work with leadership development in colleges and universities, as well as in high schools, the more contact I have with young people, the more optimistic I become. I am somewhat concerned about the world that they're facing.
Yes.
With all the conflicts, hot conflicts that we have with the, you know, the kind of disruption that they're experiencing economically and all of the challenges that they face, but they seem undaunted. And they also have a very different perspective on work and what work is and want to be part of something meaningful and important, not just something that earns a paycheck. And it's not just about Peace Corps or Teach for America, although more millennials are signing up for roles like that than ever before. Other generations, they want to do something like Peace Corps, Teach for America, something that is, it gives back to the community in much larger numbers. And they're starting organizations in larger numbers than previous generations. So there's a lot to be optimistic about.
Yeah, I like that you
Just add one thing.
Go ahead, yeah.
I was just going to comment. Well, Melissa Poe Hood is one of the individuals we wrote about, and she started her journey, leadership journey, when she was in elementary school. She was 8 years old when she got the bug, and she was 9 years old when she started an organization called Kids Face, Kids for a Clean Environment, to do just what the name says, to get kids involved in doing something to create a healthier environment and climate. And later on at 32 years old or so, she was given an award for her leadership as a young person by the Association of University Women. And she said in that acceptance speech of the that award, she said, "You never know where one step will take you. You never know where the next one will lead. The difference in being a leader is you take that step."
Oh, yeah.
What a great attitude.
That's awesome.
You take that step. Yep. That really is a difference.
It really is. You know, one thing is great that when we think about when we're when we have kids and we're raising babies and we watch them make that first step and we look at, they take not even a half step and they fall flat on their face and we're just so overwhelmed with joy and we celebrate that kind of failure, if you will, as a great achievement. And it's, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could look at all of our kind of journey throughout leadership or in life the same way, right? And not look at as necessarily failures, but just kind of is almost gifts to get to the next level. And that's really what you're talking about.
Yeah, it is.
What is it? One last thing I want to talk about here is the subject accountability. And I do a lot of surveys with my audience and I've been asked to speak on this quite a bit. And this topic comes up and what the difference between accountability and the importance of it is. Give me your take on accountability and why it's so important.
Well, we think about it, my co-author Barry Posner and I, who've done research on what people expect of leaders, look at this as an issue of credibility. When we did we asked people, what do you look for and admire in a leader, someone whose direction you would willingly follow? And people gave us about 150 different attributes, and we were able to categorize those into 20 different categories. And of those 20, we asked people to select the top 7. Over the last 30 years, Richard, that we've been gathering this data, we find that 4 and only 4 qualities have been selected by 60% or more of people consistently over that period of time, which is in itself amazing. But not only that, they taken by themselves, they're interesting, but when you put them together, it becomes a very powerful message. The top 4 are honest, forward-looking, competent, and inspiring. 3 of those 4, honest, competent, and inspiring, are what researchers in the social sciences call source credibility. Credibility ends up being the foundation of leadership. Credibility is that foundation on which we build everything, personal credibility. And a piece of credibility, so when we ask people, what is credibility behaviorally? They say, do what you say you will do, practice what you preach, put your money where your mouth is, actions have to be consistent with words. And so it implies two fundamental things. The first part is be clear about what you're going to say. So what are your values? What are your beliefs? What's your philosophy? What do you stand for?
Right.
But then the test of whether you truly believe in those or not is whether you do them. So accountability is the act of holding people responsible for what they do, and are those actions consistent with what they say? And so leaders have to hold themselves accountable, and they have to hold others accountable, because if we believe in what we're saying as an organization, as a group of people, then we'll all be doing what we say. It's not just one person, the leader, but it's all of us. So accountability is really holding ourselves to task over whether we're doing what we say, whether we're keeping our promises, whether our actions are consistent with our words.
Yes. Why do you think there's such a lack of it, or it seems to be, maybe I'm just paying attention to it more, but it seems to be such a rare trait in every aspect of life these days. It seems to be getting worse.
Well, I think the data would support that. You know, when you read, just as an example, I'm not picking on anybody, but it's in the current news. When you read the General Motors knew that there was something wrong with their cars,
yes,
but people felt that it was too expensive a fix, it would cost too much money, and instead they let this go on, which cost the lives of other people and ultimately the company billions of dollars. Wow, you know.
I know.
Not, you know, how can you possibly take that kind of an action? But they did. So there's evidence out there that people should be cynical. On the other hand, the good news is we are seeing an increase in people in organizations, leaders in organizations, starting to pay much more attention to this. So if you just take a look at the Edelman Trust Barometer, the numbers have improved over the last 4 years, you know, from the depths of the recession to date. We've seen a slight improvement. It's still not great. CEOs and government leaders still rank at the bottom of the list, but it is, the good news is it's going up, and so there's reason to be optimistic, but we still need to hold ourselves more accountable than we have been.
Well, and I think especially for new leaders out there, I think if there's one thing that's going to set you apart, if you're really looking to set yourself apart, be ready to take the accountability of the failures of your functional leaders that you're accountable for. Be prepared to take it, and amazing things will happen 9 times out of 10. I think the fear is there because they think they're going to be embarrassed or lose their job and lose their position, which may happen, but more often than not, it'll make you stand out head and shoulders above the average Joe mediocre.
Yeah, and this is also, Richard, where courage does play a role.
Yes.
Because if you're going to hold yourself or other people accountable, sometimes you may have to speak up, and that may require taking a risk. And yet if you strongly hold to that value and belief, you have an obligation to speak up and say something. And that's really kind of the adversity introduces us to ourselves. You know, that's where we really truly know how committed we are.
Oh, Jim, you're such a great influence in my life. I'm so happy you're a busy man that you took the time to come back again. What is the name of the new book, and how can people get in touch with you?
Well, the most recent e-book is Turning Adversity into Opportunity. It's a quick read on a short airplane ride or an evening at home. And then the Student Leadership Challenge for those who are involved in youth leadership development, both are out now. And you can check out our website, leadershipchallenge.com. And also send me an email at jim@kuzis.com.
Jim, as always, thank you so much for coming to the show. I'll have links to all these on the post when it goes live. Again, thank you so much for taking the time.
It's been my pleasure, Richard. Great talking with you. I hope we'll do it again.
Yes, for sure.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.